Welcome to Puentes, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guest on this edition is New Mexico State University Libraries University Archivist, Martha Shipman Andrews. She was recently appointed to the New Mexico Historical Records Advisory Board by Governor Susana Martinez. Welcome to Puentes.
Thank you very much. It's delightful to be here.
Tell us what the New Mexico Historical Records Advisory Board is.
The New Mexico Historic Records Advisory Board receives funds from the New Mexico Legislature and the National Historic Publications and Records Commission to fund the Historical Records Grant Program. It's a re-grant program to improve the preservation of and access to New Mexico's historic records.
And for how long is your appointment?
It's a one-year appointment.
And what will you be doing on the board?
The board meets several times each year to review the grants that come in from individuals, organizations, and institutions around the state who have historical records that they wish to preserve or to provide greater access to.
Well, you've been at NMSU for nearly 8 years.
That's right.
What are the qualifications that you had that Governor Susana appointed you for?
Well, the New Mexico State University Libraries actually received several of these grants. Several of our programs have been supported by NHRAB grant money. We used the money for the Daniel B. Jett project, the World War II letters project. We also received funds to accession and process the papers of Dr. Frank Harari, who was a professor of computer science here at NMSU. And we also received money for the Esther Kano project. We also received grant money to process the KOB radio papers, the predecessor of KRWG. The RWG is Ralph Willis Goddard, of course, in KRWG. And more recently, we received funds to digitize the university's Roundup, the school newspaper, which was a great success.
And the Roundup has a new look as well, too, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, let's go into what makes Martha Martha. You came from Virginia?
That's right. I lived for 3 decades in the Washington, D.C. area. When my kids had finished school, my son graduated from William & Mary. I could go anywhere I wanted, so I chose New Mexico.
And you got your master's and degree in what, from which school?
My MLIS, my library science degree, came from the University of Pittsburgh.
And then you went on to Wellesley College?
I got my AB from Wellesley and then my master's from the University of Pittsburgh.
And now from that, has that also helped you in editing and writing books?
Well, this is something, an interest I developed here at the university. When I discovered how wonderful the Jet World War II letters were, I decided it was a book that had to be written. And it involved a lot of editing and a lot of selection. Was a wonderful project to work on.
Well, tell us about the Jet World War II letters.
Yes.
What is that?
Dean Daniel B. Jett was Dean of Engineering in the 1930s and 1940s. He was, by all descriptions, by his students and people who knew him, a remarkable man. He loved his students. He was very concerned about them. And when they went off to war, he wrote to them. He created newsletters so that they could keep up with each other while they were in every theater of war around the world. I think overall we have 5,000 letters from students to Dean Jett and letters back. It's really a remarkable collection of what the average soldier's life was like in World War II. Made a fabulous book.
And what is the name of the book now?
The name of the book is, excuse my language, it's The Whole Damned World. And we were really lucky. It struck a nerve in New Mexico. It was named one of the best books about New Mexico during the centennial year. And I think it's because the stories are so heartrending. Many of the guys actually did not make it through the war. And they wrote very, very fondly of New Mexico.
So there's about some of our New Mexico Aggies at war From 1941 to 1945.
That's right.
So is this the first book you edited?
Yes, it is.
And now you've edited another book and have written into it as well. Tell us about the name of that book and a little bit about it.
This latest book is called Out of the Shadows, The Women of Southern New Mexico. And this was an idea I had really when I first came here. You're struck, at least I was struck when I came, about how male-centric the history of this area is. You hear about Billy the Kid, you hear about Pat Garrett, you hear about Geronimo, and I really wanted to know what the women were doing. I wanted to know what their role was. They really seemed underrepresented in history. We, in southern New Mexico, don't have a Georgia O'Keeffe or a Maria Martinez. We have women who struggled and probably lived rather difficult lives, but they were really significant lives, I think. And I also noticed that it's very hard to find documentation about the lives of women.
How were you able to find this documentation?
Well, in the photographs that we have in our wonderful historical collection. Our photograph collection is really remarkable in that regard. And if you start looking at the photographs, you see the lives of women unfold. It's really quite remarkable. And so I got a group of women who had written extensively on women's history, Darlis Miller and Joan Jensen, both professors emerita from the History and Women's Studies Department. Margaret Jacobs, who was a former history professor here. My colleague, Charles Stanford, who was archivist for the Rio Grande Historical Collections. Wendy Simpson, who works in the library. Terry Reynolds, who was curator of the New Mexico State University Museum. I got them to look at the photographs, too, and to write essays based on what they saw in the photographs. I think we have managed to illuminate the lives of women in quite remarkable ways.
Were they able to reach family members of some of these women in order to discover the history or stories about them?
Yes, Terry Reynolds wrote on the Amador women. The family, of course, is very prominent in southern New Mexico, and she had worked on various aspects of the Amador papers and knew the Amador family very well. So, you know, that essay comes from a very learned place. Darlis Miller wrote on Agnes Morley Cleveland, who's quite a well-known writer and also grew up on a ranch in Dattle, New Mexico. She loved the ranch. Her mother came here under difficult circumstances. Her husband left her. Agnes was and her brother were left very much to run the ranch, and they adored it. They loved it. And it shows a sort of enthusiasm for ranching life. Agnes's writings were just sort of ecstatic. I think she had the time of her life. But she had a kind of double life because she also was sent to private schools in the East, and on the insistence of her mother, you know, she longed to be back in the West. She was very much a Westerner. And Joan Jensen wrote a really seminal essay on the Mescalero basket makers, women who, you know, living under really desperate situations and circumstances, developed a business, a very, very profitable business of making these beautiful baskets that are so very highly priced.
How far back does that go, the making of the baskets?
To the 1870s and 80s. It was really a commercial venture for them. It was a way for them to make a living off the tourist trade and the Anglos who had moved into the area and could support that kind of more than craft. It was really a business. And they were very, very cunning about it. You
know? What town is this in?
Mescalero.
The actual reservation?
Yes.
And that's near Ruidoso?
That's right.
Now, you have a story in the book.
Yes.
About?
The title of my essay is Educating the Useful Woman. And it's about the young women who came to the university in its early days and sought out education. I talk about what they were able to learn, the kind of curriculum that they were exposed to, and the different conditions under which they came to the university. In those days, it was not assumed that women would want, seek out education. But many of them were encouraged by their parents to go to university.
And were there any Hispanic women involved?
And not in the early days. That came later. The early female students at NMSU were generally daughters of local ranchers. And one of them was Jessie Cassad. Another was the daughter of a local lawyer, John McPhee. They were probably more likely to get education than other people in the area. But it's interesting to me that the university really needed female students to make a go of it.
In what way?
Well, in many of those classes, there were more women than men. They charged so little tuition that the university needed as many students as it could get. And if you read the Morrill Act, for example, that created the land-grant institutions in 1962, it's very oriented toward educating young men in the fields of military science and agriculture and engineering. It says almost nothing about encouraging female education. But out here, they really had to encourage young women to come to the university so that the university would survive. Otherwise, it would have been very, very few men. So I found that very interesting. And immediately, you know, you see the formation of literary societies and things that young women would appreciate, the poetry societies. And there was an attempt very early on to create a special curriculum for women because, of course, they wouldn't want to take mathematics or engineering. There were a lot of very bad assumptions, I think, and that particular curriculum, which was heavy on the humanities and history and languages, went by the wayside. The women received a Bachelor of Science degree, just like the men.
So they did learn mathematics and engineering.
They could take mathematics. There were no engineering students, no female engineering students until the 1930s. But there was evidence that women wanted to learn surveying, for example, and they wanted to learn assaying, and they wanted to have a pretty well-grounded scientific education. Many of the early theses that these students wrote had to do with natural science and observation, and they weren't frivolous and poetic. They were pretty well-grounded in scientific method. So it's not expected, I think, that you would find such intense interest in education among women.
An archivist here at NMSU, you had access to these theses.
We did, and the early records at the school, of course, the college catalogs tell you a lot about what was going on at the school, who was there, who stayed more than a semester. A lot of people had a hard time paying even, the $10 tuition per semester. It was difficult, and they needed work to come here. There wasn't a girls' dormitory right away. That came a little bit later. But the school developed because of the women, I think, in a great degree.
And so we find these stories then in Out of the Shadows. So women were basically in the shadows then.
Well, there was one particular photograph that sort of sparked my imagination. It was a family poised on the porch of their house, the children pretty prominent and in the sunlight, and the mother was standing in the shadows of the door. And that, to me, was kind of a metaphor for what I wanted to talk about in this book.
Is that where the title comes from?
I think it did.
So whose idea was the title?
It came to me. It was a working title at the beginning. I thought, well, maybe, in the years that I work on this, I'll find something better. But I actually ended up using it.
So as the editor of the book and also an author of some of the essays, then, how has that been received?
Very well. I've been doing some book signings, and because there are several of us who worked on this book, we've had a good time connecting with the public and bringing these unknown stories to light. We were nominated for a New Mexico Book Award in the anthology and some other category. I can't quite remember, but that's an honor.
Definitely an honor. And then being appointed to the advisory board for the New Mexico Historical Records Advisory Board as a member there. And what do you plan to do on the board?
We will find out what our role is. There's an orientation for new board members. But our job is to read and evaluate the applications for grant money for the state.
How many members are there on the board?
There are about 20. The board hasn't been completely full, so I'm not exactly sure what the number is in total. It may be less than that. But I haven't met all the members yet. We're going to have a meeting on December 13th, I think.
Well, I really appreciate you being my guest on Puentes. And my guest this afternoon, Martha Shipman Andrews, NMSU's Library University Archivist. Thank you, Martha.
It was a great pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.